Back on Auburn's first and Auburn's favorite sports talk show, all of our sports call callers and guests join us on the Auburn Bank phone line. Auburn Bank has been your hometown bank for over 110 years. Visit them online at auburnbank.com for more information. Your partner, your neighbor, your friend, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Give us a call, 334-887-3401. We're taking the phone line right now, though, to chat with one of our very good friends, Justin Ferguson, from the Auburn Observer, as we do each and every Tuesday. Jay Ferg, how are you, sir?
I'm all right. How are y'all?
We can't complain, man. We can't complain. Excited to talk some Auburn athletics with you and a variety of different topics as we always get into when you join us here on Tuesday. Do the Braves win tonight and close it out?
Man, I hope so. It would make my life a lot easier if they did. No, I really like the lineup they've got going tonight. I think Max is due to bounce back and have a good performance. And as weird as it sounds, because you know they are the NL team in this series, I like it when the Braves get to have a DH and get to play a guy like Soler and have Soler and Rosario and Peterson and Duvall all at the lineup at the same time. I think the way they switched it around, Ozzie's been struggling, put him toward the bottom of the order, gives it, you know, he can bounce back and have a little potential pop late with him and Dansby and Travis. It's a really good lineup, and you're actually – I mean, you were able to split, you know, two games when you were going bullpen games, and now you've got one of your best who, you know, at one point in the season was pitching like one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. So I feel good. I feel good about their chances tonight. But let's just see. I think there could be a chance we could be celebrating later today.
From the Braves' perspective, do you still think World Series MVP is up for grabs, or how do you see that going right now if they were to close it out tonight?
Yeah, probably. I think there are a number of guys who you could make a case for. I mean, Rosario destroyed the NLCS, but and has played well in the World Series, but he hasn't had like game winning hits or anything like that. Like he had in the NLCS. If I could see if the Braves come out tonight and win this game and say you get a really good. You get a really good inning or two from like a Tyler Matzik or a Will Smith. Like, I could see one of their dominant, late relievers getting it. Just because I think in their wins this season, in this postseason, and in this World Series specifically, they've been able to get guys out there who can slam the door, and that might be the biggest.
I like that idea.
Characteristic.
Low scoring games, yeah, I like that idea to see a reliever try and get that award. So obviously the game four, I guess it was Saturday night following the Ole Miss football game, and I believe you tweeted out that after we had left, you and Jordan Davis had a big high five once the game went final. Is your hand still ringing from that?
Not anymore, but yeah, it was still hurting. It was still hurting for a little while, and it was funny because I went to like type some stuff out and start writing, and I was like, dang, my hand is still kind of stinging a little bit when I was moving it around. But yeah, it was fun. It was fun to kind of see that the back-to-back homers to give the Braves the lead and the win happened while we were talking to players. So it was kind of weird, seeing the Twitter tweet deck kind of blowing up about what was happening with the Braves, but still trying to keep your attention long enough to make sure you ask the right questions and type them out correctly, for post-game quotes.
What questions did you have? Like, what questions did you have for the players after that win versus Ole Miss?
I think I pretty much talked to each one of them. Bo asking him about getting into the running game with him, how important that was. Tank, what was different about him in this game compared to the last one? Asking Zacoby about the fourth down stops and, how important those were. And then, Roger McCreary and Jalen Simpson about how do you slow down a passing attack like that. So just kind of nothing earth shattering in there, but it was a huge win for Auburn, and so you had a lot to get out of that one.
Ferg, Auburn hosted one of the most dynamic offenses in all of college football and held them to 20 points. Talk a little bit about how they were able to snuff that offense out, especially in the second half.
Yeah, it helped that Corral wasn't 100%, and they were missing some of their best receivers and were down a key lineman. But, I think the big thing for Auburn in this game was they stopped the run really, really well. And that's what they've been doing all season. That was my story today at the Observer, was just looking like this is an Auburn run defense that ranks up there with the best they've had in the last decade plus. I mean, you could put it up there with the 2019 run defense. You could put it up with the 2010 run defense as well. And those were obviously really, really, you know, big-time teams for the Tigers, especially that 19 defense with Marlon Davidson and Derrick Brown and K.J. Britt, you know, kind of patrolling the middle of the park there. And so, you know, that was the key thing because, you know, Corral and that passing game, he was not at his best. And Auburn had something to do with that, obviously, but he wasn't at his best. He didn't have all of those receiving weapons, but he had those running backs back there. And those, you know, when Ole Miss has been able to really put a hurting on teams this year, it's been they've been able to kind of throw off their running game. And they weren't able to really get that running game super going. I think they did not bust a run of longer than like 15 or 17 yards in this game. Auburn didn't give up very many big plays in general. Kept everything in front of them. And it's just like that is an offense where if they're not hitting and clicking explosive plays, they can have a tendency to get a little frustrated, force some things, and, you know, kind of break down and late down and red zone situations. And so that was key. And this is the thing about this Auburn defense that stands out to me is that Derek Mason plays the top-down defense, keep everything in front of you. This is not going to be a unit that is going to dominate the stat sheet like a Kevin Steele defense would, or, you know, especially like a Georgia defense is doing this year. But I think this defense is a little bit more matchup-proof and future-proof. And what I mean by that is this. In college football, when everybody's chasing explosive plays and finding the ways to get the big chunk plays and string them together on you, there's a lot of value in a defense that just says, hey, we're going to keep everything in front of us. You're not going to get the big plays on us. You're going to have to drive against us. And the longer the drives go in terms of plays, and the more opportunities we'll have to get off the field, the more opportunities we'll have, you know, to get, you know, the third down stop, the fourth down stop, the red zone stop, and frustrate you that way. And Auburn did exactly that on Saturday.
Looking forward to this Texas A&M game. Obviously, we talk a lot about Zach Calzada. We talk about Isaiah Spiller and their offensive woes at times and then triumphs against Alabama. What their defense, though, has been consistently good. What about that poses a challenge for Auburn?
Oh, I mean, Mike Elko is one of the best defensive coordinators in college football. He always has you know, a really good plan in place. They change things up front. They've got talent. I think, you know, A&M under Jimbo Fisher, they've recruited well. It just hasn't seemed to kind of all click together. I think part of it is because they haven't had a quarterback that can kind of make it all go yet. But they've got dudes on defense, especially in that front seven. And so they're going to make life tough on Auburn to – You know, Auburn's going to have to really play some of their best ball of the season to be able to run it as effectively as they need to be able to, you know, protect Bo Nix long enough so he can make plays downfield. This is an A&M defense that's really, really good. And I think this is an Auburn defense that is really, really good. So this might be one of those kind of lower scoring classic SEC West slugfest that we might not associate with Auburn and A&M because of their histories and A&M's, you know, relatively brief time in the league. But that's kind of the vibe I'm getting from this matchup.
We saw a better Tank Bigsby game last week against Ole Miss. Do you think that's going to lend itself to seeing more of those, or what does Tank Bigsby need to do to continue to keep up that level of play?
I think Auburn just needs to block well in front of him more. I think he did look, you know, a little bit more rested, had a little bit more zip to him, you know, was breaking tackles better. I think the off week did him some good. But also, I think Auburn just did a good job of running the ball and blocking in front of them. They went to the two and three tight end sets a ton in this game and said, you know what, Ole Miss, you're 2 weeks up front. You play odd man fronts and you're very light up front with that. Your front six or seven can't really hang with us. You know, over the course of a full game. So we're just going to hammer away at you. And they did that, and it worked. And I think that was a good matchup thing for them. It's going to be much tougher to do that against Texas A&M. It's not impossible. Some teams have been able to run the ball pretty well on A&M this year, but this is a good defense, and this is a tougher defense at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, Auburn's offensive line, their tight ends, did a really good job of blocking against Ole Miss, and it was Ole Miss. You know, you have to bring that kind of level of execution and consistency against a much tougher team on Saturday for them to have a chance. But I think, yeah, the thing we saw in this game is just more consistent blocking up front gives you more opportunities for a guy like Tank Bigsby to go to work.
Ferg, Bo Nix has had really good games 3 or 4 weeks in a row now. How do you think he can continue that heading into College Station?
Yeah, I think he just needs to continue to do what he has been doing, which is, you know, don't make anything too complicated. I mean, go back to the Arkansas game, go back to the especially last week against Ole Miss. You watch him throw the football in that game, you didn't sit there and say, oh, wow, you know, he made a really tough throw or a really tough – no, dudes were getting open, and he was just finding guys consistently in time. He's a guy who knew where to go with the ball, trusted his protection, trusted his receivers to get open, trusted the play calling, and, you know, is looking comfortable and confident in an offense that is starting to really pick it up around him. So I think he's just got to continue to do what he does best, which is use his legs, you know, design runs, kind of scramble whenever his offensive line inevitably does give up some pressures, because they are human and they are, you know, a college offensive line. You're going to have breakdowns. But also just, you know, trust those receivers and give them good balls. I think that's the thing with Bo, is like he had a few misses against Ole Miss, but it's a low, low percentage. You can go all the way back to that LSU game. Low percentage of just, hey, I just missed this throw. A lot of drops, a lot of throwaways have been his incompletions. He's just playing the most consistent ball of his career right now. And one of the things is, it's like, he doesn't have to go out there and be, you know, somebody he's not. And he doesn't have to go out there and say, well, you know, I have to be the superstar. I have to put on, like, you know, the Johnny Manziel costume or something like that. No, he's playing really, really good football in the confines of this system, and showing that he's got a good arm, he's got good vision, he's got good pocket awareness, he's got all the tools that made him a five-star receiver, and now you have both an offense, I think a staff that has learned how to call plays for him better over the last few weeks, and also a supporting cast that is playing with more confidence now.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer is joining us here on the program today, as we are a couple of days away from Auburn and Texas A&M, but also Auburn men's basketball, with an exhibition opener on Friday night before Morehead State coming away here in a week from today, 7 days from now. Auburn tips off the newest season. You got a chance to catch up with Bruce Pearl a little bit earlier today, Ferg. Did anything stand out to you?
Yeah, they're expecting a pretty good game from Southern Indiana. This is a team that's very close to Bruce Pearl, obviously. It was his first big head coaching job, kind of launched him in his career. The head coach of Southern Indiana is one of his former players that was, you know, when Bruce talked about the best defender he had ever coached prior to Isaac Okoro, one of the only guys he said the only other guy that could guard 1 through 5 like Isaac was this guy, Stan Gerard, who was going to be the head coach for Southern Indiana. This is a team that does a lot of similar things to Auburn, drive, kick, out offense. They got a center that can score very effectively, kind of like how Auburn's got one now in Walker Kessler. They're a pretty good three-point shooting team. They like to run in transition. They run similar defenses to what – I mean, this is kind of like a mini version of Auburn in terms of style that you're going to see on Friday night. And so they're expecting a good test from them. They're expecting, you know, a game where they can kind of step up and work some of the kinks out of their rotation, learn how they want to play guys and when they want to play them, you know, just get everything going before the opener on Tuesday night against Morehead.
What's the best way to kind of figure out a rotation, Ferg? It's so early in the season, I'm sure there's going to be just a game scenario. This is probably going to be the way to do it, or is there a better way to sort of figure that out?
Yeah, I think it's just scenarios. I think it's just kind of seeing it. I mean, they've practiced it a lot. They've had scrimmages against, you know, they had a scrimmage against UAB. They had a scrimmage against each other. And one of the things last Friday night that we saw was, you know, after the 20-minute, like, okay, here's what a normal half would look like, you know, TV timeouts and all that stuff. You work through a rotation then, and then on top of that, they ran 2 4-minute periods where they ran some in-game stuff and, like, trying to figure out the situations there. So they've got a good foundation of, you know, what they want and when they want it. I think it's just kind of being, all right, let's put it all together and what that looks like in a true 40-minute-looking game, and then see if you have to adjust from there. And I think one of the unique parts about Auburn is Auburn's got a really good scout team, and some of those guys who are on the scout team have earned chances to play. Bruce said they're going to play probably 10 or 11 on Friday night. That's more than the healthy scholarship players on the team right now. So that means somebody's going to get some opportunities. And then until you get Alan Flanagan back out there, you might see just a different kind of rotation early on. So, yeah, it's just more of a, you know, you kind of play it as you go, and kind of figure out on the fly. But I think they've got a good foundation in place because they've spent the last stretch here of this offseason simulating as many game scenarios as they can, not only against themselves, but against others.
You're becoming a busy man these days with Auburn football going into their final four games and 1 week away from college basketball. What's that going to look like from the Auburn Observer perspective with you, Ferg?
Yeah, tomorrow I'm going to have a story up at the Observer on Zepp Jasper because I'm fascinated by Zepp. He's a guy who might not start this season. I mean, Wendell Green's going to be your starting point guard. And looks like Katie Johnson might have that two spot locked down, but they're going to need Zepp because Zepp might be the first guy at both the one and the two off the bench. And he is such, best defender on the team, especially with Alan Flanagan out early in the season. And he's got a really good evolving, offensive game. He's one of the oldest players on the team, most experienced player on the team. And all that kind of really adds up. You'll get a mix of football stories and you'll get a mix of basketball stories. And, I think this is going to be the time of year where you can expect something pretty much every day from the Observer. And when we do podcasts, it'll be, we'll talk football and basketball at the same time.
$6 a month or $60 a year. I'm a part of the family. You should be as well. Check out Justin Ferguson with the Auburn Observer at JFergusonAU on Twitter. All right, fun with Ferg. I've got to bring this up with you, Ferg, because this is happening at the top of the next hour in a matter of moments. I've got a ninth grade vocab test coming my way in the 5 o'clock hour. How do you think I'm going to perform on this?
I'm trying to think about what vocabulary I did in the ninth grade.
I don't know either. I just picked this came to be because yesterday a word was said on the program that I have never heard before in my entire life. And
what was it?
The word was amalgamation.
Okay.
Crazy. What does that word mean, Ferg? I had no idea. We're just talking a nightly TV guide, winking at Bernie's, and amalgamation is dropped. And I'm like, what is this? And so I need to go back to school, I guess, and I'm going to have a ninth grade vocab test coming my way.
Yeah, to your defense, amalgamation is not a word you hear a ton, but, it's also a word that's got a lot of common synonyms. You should know the general what that means. At least use context clues. At least know when it's said in the sentence and just be like, okay, well, that's probably what this means, based off of that.
True. That would be the best way to go about it then. Is that what you do? You just look for, kind of think of synonyms?
Yeah.
Synonyms.
Nice. Good job.
Synonyms.
Good job, man.
I'm a mess.
It's like when you teach kids, reading comprehension, it's like, okay, if you come across a word that you don't understand, look at the words around it. I teach English as a second language, every week, and, one of the things we try to teach, people there is look, if you don't know a word, that's okay. Plenty of people who speak English and have spoken it all their life don't know the definition of any word, single word, like you. So you have to, pick up on context clues. You got to pick up on the surrounding things, and you should be able to kind of figure it out from there, because English is not a language that throws you. Our sentences are longer and we use more descriptive things, and you should be able to kind of figure it out.
How did I not know that you were an ESL teacher?
I don't broadcast it a lot, but it's just something. It's something I do every week.
That is so cool, man.
Yeah, I teach a bunch of people who are a lot smarter than me at a lot of things, English, because that's one of the few things I do know.
So is Spanish your another language that you feel comfortable using, Ferg?
No. English is the only language I can feel I'm very comfortable in speaking. I can read Spanish, but that's about it.
Okay.
I'm not very comfortable in speaking Spanish. But so yeah, when I say teaching English as a second language, I teach it to people who already have the basic foundation of English. We're just working on getting better at it. The class I'm teaching right now is pronunciation. So it's a lot of practice, a lot of repetition. Stuff like that. I'm not sitting here teaching people how to read and write because, man, that's hard enough as it is.
I would be impossible to teach, I'd imagine.
The good news for me is that, with the international community at Auburn, which is one of Auburn's best strengths as a city, is that we have people from all over the world come here. And there are people who come from all over the world come to Auburn are brilliant. Just brilliant human beings. And so it's a lot easier to teach somebody, English when, they've got PhDs and engineering and science. And I'm like, well, I'm an idiot who went to journalism school at a place that's not even good for journalism school. It is kind of humbling, teaching people who, like, you know, I have a student in one of my classes who speaks seven languages and just wants to get better at English. I'm like, good Lord, I barely can speak English.
Who knew that Justin Ferguson, like, I know you pretty well, Ferg, I would like to think, and my mind is blown that this is, how do you have hours in the day, man?
Yeah, the good news is I only do it once a week, and yeah, it's just a couple hours on Wednesday nights that I do it for, and so it's been a lot of fun. My grandparents have done it for a very, very long time, and so I started doing it with them a while back, and I've kind of picked up on it again now that I am my own boss and I can set my own hours. It makes it a whole lot easier for me to do stuff like this.
That's outstanding. That is absolutely awesome. Look, so now we know if we ever wanted to see Ferguson for a dinner, Wednesday nights are probably not the best night to make that happen.
No, not on Wednesday nights. Wednesday nights are pretty booked up for me.
Okay. When can we have dinner?
It's part of the reason why the Braves need to settle this thing tonight. Yeah. I cannot go through a game seven when I know I won't be able to watch at least like the first hour of the game.
Yeah. At least the game's 5 hours long, so you'll catch a little bit of it. So when can we have dinner?
I mean, you dropped the ball 2 weeks ago. You know, True. You were supposed to. Yeah, I said, hey, let's think of some time during the
I said, just set, you actually you, did. I actually forgot that happened, but that is something that took place. I'll get Javon on it, okay?
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I think at this point now, it'll have to be after football season, but we'll figure it out.
Okay, we'll figure it out. Ferg, you're the absolute best. I'll let you know how the vocab quiz goes, and we'll catch up with you after a while, okay?
Absolutely.